Okay, I've got a question. What do an Irish saint, a fancy society wedding, and more than a few Irish stouts have in common?
Well, somehow, believe it or not, they are all key plot points in 2024's Irish Wish, which is harder for me to say than it should be. Irish Wish, 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 wish. We've got a lot to talk about, Josh.
We do, Jennifer, and we'll wrap it all on this episode of Do You Watch What I Watch? It is March, and we have to see if the luck of the Irish will be with us as we review two brand new movies this month, and we will get to the first one starring Lindsay Lohan in just a moment. But first,
she's back, baby. Are you part Irish? That was a great little enunciation there.
I'd like to think that I'm
a little
part
flourish.
Irish. Yeah, a little flourish, if you will.
Oh, man. All right. Well, first things first, help us grow our podcast. If you're here, we so appreciate it. Tell a friend, subscribe on YouTube, subscribe on your podcast networks. We're everywhere you want to listen to us. So give us a follow. Hit us up on doyouwatchwhatiwatch.com on our website if you have any questions.
Okay. So let's get started. Here is the plot summary for Irish Wish.
Irish Wish, 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 Wish.
When the love of Maddie's life gets engaged to her best friend, she puts her feelings aside to be a bridesmaid at their wedding in Ireland. Now, this plot summary on IMDb really misses the entire plot of this movie, which is that she winds up making a wish that maybe kind of changes the course of history. So let's just
Right.
get
to the
it.
Magic is just sucked right out of it, isn't it? Oh, well.
So the curtain comes up and we get the definition of a wish read to us in a sweet Irish accent with soaring Celtic music. Then bam, we're in New York City. Like literally it was. We're off.
I raised my eyebrows when you said bam and my hat fell down. So yeah, listeners, I was on YouTube trying to wear and my son's St. Patrick's Day hat and it did not work. So we're going hatless now. Sorry.
There you go. Costume change already. We're like 2 minutes
already
into the episode. Yeah.
I know.
Exactly.
I'm like Reba hosting a country music award.
We only hope someday. Anywho, speaking of celebrities, we are at a hotshot red carpet premiere in New York City, full of pops, and Lindsay Lohan is there. She plays this woman named Maddie, pops out of a taxi. Now it turns out she is not, in fact, a celebrity, but her boyfriend, maybe boyfriend, her friend, we don't know who he is yet. His name is Paul Kennedy, and he is a celebrity. Now, mind you, dear listener, this is not a movie premiere or a television premiere. This is a book debut, which seems like a little bit of a stretch to me, but I don't know. Did you buy the book debut celebrity status of this guy 90 seconds into this, Jennifer?
No, I didn't. And I thought she was way underdressed when I thought it was a movie premiere. And she had her scarf. And right out of the gate, the scarf gets hung up in the taxi or Uber or whatever. And it goes flying off. Lindsay Lohan already hitting us with the physical comedy bit. Our
and
girl.
That is a continuing theme throughout. Stay tuned.
Yeah.
Anyway, it turns out Maddie is in love with Paul. And she's his book editor. So there's a bit of a business personal dynamic at play here. And her phone rings in the middle of this big hotshot red carpet shindig. And she unpacks her feelings immediately with her mom back home in Iowa, played by Jane Seymour. Now, her mom is a principal in Iowa. Mind you, this scene is taking place in New York City, and it's nighttime. Mm-hmm. And her mom's in Iowa, and it's apparently the middle of the day. So there was a time zone thing bonkers.
What kind of Bermuda Triangle time warp were we in? Because I was like, okay, maybe I missed it and the book premiere was in Ireland. Would that make the time work? I don't know. It was weird.
It was
glaring.
Bonkers. Anyway, she sees two of her friends at the book shindig. They gab briefly and then Maddie goes off to the bar to find Paul, who is grabbing a quick cocktail. She contemplates laying it all out there, the feelings that she has for him. And he says he wants to take their relationship to the next level. but not how she wants it to go. So, ruh-roh, things aren't looking good for them. He leaves the bar and quite literally runs into Maddie's gal pals. One of them, Emma, is having trouble with a false lash, and it's rather intimate when Paul steps in to help and gently caresses her eyelid, which, okay, it was...
Listen, buddy, I don't know where your hands have been. I don't know. That's how you get conjunctivitis, okay?
I don't need you
with your little bar hands and, like, you know, what if you have peanut residue or something, salt from a pretzel, touching my precious eyelid? No.
No. No. Anywho,
that's clearly, at least a third date thing.
Seriously.
Everybody knows that.
Clearly, though, it is love at first sight for these two, even though it is just a wonky false lash. Anyway, the gals leave, and hold on to your horses, Jennifer, because time passes. Paul and Emma are getting married, and we have literally jumped the pond to Ireland. Like, we get a joke from Lindsay Lohan about whiplash, which it quite literally was. Mm-hmm. And then we get a meet cute at baggage claim in Ireland when Maggie and a guy named James try to grab one single bag from the belt. It is his, not hers, so whoopsie do. This storytelling device of this whiplash was weird and right out of left field. What did you think?
I thought it was really random. Turns out it kind of continues throughout the movie, in my opinion. I feel like there was a lot of jumping around quickly. I mean, the runtime was what? Just a little over an hour and a half.
Yep.
Which I guess isn't that much shorter than like a standard Hallmark, but it's a little shorter. And I felt that. I don't know. It felt short to me. But
exactly.
We'll get there.
Anyway, James is the guy at baggage claim, and he is a nature photographer. So they're kind of oil and water at the start, as evidence when they both wind up side by side on the same tour bus. Now, the bus is going to let Maggie out without her luggage, of course, at the fanciest of Irish castles. That's where Paul's family is having the wedding. They are, we get it, soups loaded. She doesn't have her bridesmaid dress. They're all going on some spontaneous outing that Paul has planned. And our last, Maggie, is having a time with it all because, of course, she has feelings for our guy, Paul. This turns out to be a pristine lakeside picnic and a canoe trip. Maggie passes on the canoeing and opts instead for a walk through the wildflowers when, lo and behold, she spots some sort of mysterious stone bench. And as you would do if you were in the most idyllic of Irish places, you would sit on this stone bench and you'd pull out your phone and FaceTime your mom, because that's what Maggie decides to do here.
Yeah.
And she talks to her mom about everything that's going on. There's a bit of a hiccup in the cell signal, and out of nowhere, a mysterious, maybe magical Irish lass of some sort.
Scarfed woman.
Very weird. Shows up standing right over Maggie's shoulder and convinces her to make a wish. Now, Maggie, given the choice of wishing anything when confronted by this woman mere seconds later, decides, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to swing for the fence here. And she says, I wish I was marrying Paul Kennedy. Okay. The Irish lass then puts on a show with the leaves from the tree and flowers and wind and magic and blah, blah, blah. And bam, Maggie wakes up in bed, claiming that she had a wild dream. Turns out Paul is in the bathroom. Oh no, fresh from the shower. It gets oddly slapstick when Lindsay Lohan stumbles her way back into the bedroom and she runs into Emma in the hallway. So this is awkward all of a sudden. So time, the course of history has been altered. Was this as weird for you as it was for me?
Yeah, but I think it was supposed to be. I mean, I think it was supposed to be quirky and zany and magical and, you know, what have you. I was taken back to our last movie we talked about with the Jane Austen ghost, and I thought that maybe this is Jane Austen 2.0. We're being haunted again.
Here we go. It's an emerging theme on season 3 of Do You Watch What I Watch? The haunting.
Yes, everybody. Yes, the haunting. We're cursed.
Anyway, Maggie tries to sort out these latest weirdo developments with her other gal pal, Heather. She finally gets on board with the idea of all of this, her wish coming true, and she hops down to breakfast when a big problem emerges. They need a photographer for the wedding. But of course, here we go. If only we knew a photographer, right? If only we had been
introduced. If only we had just met one. Yeah.
Exactly.
The only one was supposed to be in Ireland for a sheep shearing competition that has now been canceled. So he has no gigs in Ireland.
No gigs. So we see clearly where this is going. Paul wants to go for a bike ride, but Maggie doesn't really know how to ride a bike, and she crashes into a fence. Turns out Emma is a big fan of cardio, including cycling. And what do you know? They were the ones who were meant to be. So we're getting very clearly that as much as Maggie likes Paul, he is really supposed to be with Emma. This is only more painfully aware when Paul's mother insists Maggie wear a family heirloom dress. James is shopping at a local store. Meantime, he wins a copy of Paul's book because he's the 100th customer of the day, which, okay. Yeah. He is less than thrilled by this, however, and he is also bummed when he learns his photography gig has been canceled by the Irish genie, which is what I call her until we know who she is a little bit later. Because I was like, this feels very much like Aladdin, and she's Irish. I'm just going to call her the Irish genie. Anyway, she is clearly working behind the scenes to sort of make things happen here. Anyway, Maggie...
Is a sheep shearing competition a big draw for tourism?
I would assume, I guess. I mean,
do they shear different shapes and logos into the sheep?
Now that would be like an art. Is there an artistic category? Because it might
be like a Nike swoosh or something, you know?
I would certainly think that there is a speed element to it, but maybe there is an artistic category or like a dyeing. Could you dye different sort of patterns or like a tie-dyed sheep? Could we do that?
A bohemian.
A bohemian.
Sheep.
Hippie sheep. There you go.
Hippie sheep chic. Say that 3 times fast.
Exactly. Anyway, Maggie spots the Irish genie in the distance after she has canceled the sheep shearing competition, and Maggie takes off. She is still wearing this gaudy wedding gown, and quite literally, again, more physical comedy here, she quite literally tumbles into Paul's passing convertible. It is mildly bonkers, because I'm like, how does this photographer who doesn't even live here and is just, you know, randomly hired to shoot sheep shearing competitions, how does he have this really quite swanky convertible that he's just jaunting across the Irish countryside in? But you kind of have to suspend all kinds of reality to really get on board with this one. So
there's a genie involved, an Irish genie. So
there you have it.
All bets are on the table, or all bets are off, rather.
Anyway, Paul's mother is there, of course, because she's there for the dress fitting, the whole nine yards. She meets James and hires him sight unseen to shoot the wedding. So, of course, James is now going to be there. He's there at the big fancy mansion to get the skinny on the festivities and what the bride, well, I should say really what her soon-to-be mother-in-law really, really wants here. And sparks start flying between Maggie and James a bit. So we start to get that their romance is obviously going to be the thing that we contend with here. Now, Maggie accidentally whacks Paul in the boy parts in the middle of the night because, of course, she's not used to the idea of being in the same bed with him prior to their wedding. And so
Elevating the slapstick comedy.
Oh,
that,
my gosh.
I guess.
All over the place.
It's like high school comedy.
Very much so. But apparently the force of this is such that he is not able to make the scouting session with James the next day for their wedding photos. So what do you know it? Fate has forced Maggie and James together for a flirty jaunt into the Irish countryside. Cut to Iowa. So let's go back to Iowa here.
Yeah.
Where Maggie's mom is sleeping and we see her alarm clock go haywire. And I'm wondering why. What's going on here? Anyway.
It made no sense at the
made
time.
No sense.
It made no sense.
James and Maggie wind up on the most scenic of Irish cliffs. It really does look pretty here. And they continue their convo about marriage, her dreams of being an author and being true to oneself. James really seems to be ratcheting up the flirt factor here. Paul and Emma are also getting cozy back at the Irish mansion. She is helping him nurse his wounds from Maggie's midnight beatdown. Maggie's mom winds up waking up at 9-ish, which is apparently, again, some sort of problem, but I haven't figured out why this is a problem just yet. It's not been clear at all to me. A fallen tree, meantime, back in Ireland, forces Maggie and James to a traditional Irish pub where they discuss his search for a home and love. So if it feels like I'm frantic with the plot points, now you know what it's like to watch this thing a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You blink and you'll miss something and you're like, how did we get here?
Literally, this is not one of those movies that you put on in the background while you're folding laundry and you dare not slip to the kitchen to get yourself a Diet Coke while you're watching this thing either, because you're going to miss something. At the pub, they are discussing his search for home and love. There are googly eyes, a game of darts, and with his hands guiding her hips and arms into the proper formation, she hits a bullseye and has to remind him that she's getting married in 2 days when it's maybe kind of obvious that they're going to kiss. Okay, here we go. We see where this is going. Okay, cut to Maggie's mom. She's at the airport in Des Moines, Iowa. Again, turns out she overslept and she missed her flight to Ireland, and the gal at the ticket counter, a former student of hers, is less than helpful. So, okay, it finally becomes obvious mom's trying to get to Ireland. The clock changed. Presumably the Irish genie did that to kind of...
The genie, yeah, twitch your nose. Wait, that's Bewitched. The genie did the...
Yes.
Fold your hands and nod.
Whatever the Irish version of that, maybe just did a little jig or something. I don't know. Anyway, again, a little bit bonkers. We're back at the pub in Ireland where we get a folk dance montage, and Maggie is a natural at it and definitely feeling something for James at this point. Next day, James's car, out of nowhere, is having some sort of trouble, and Maggie may miss the wedding rehearsal, so there's problems abounding here. The future mother-in-law back at the mansion is not having it, so Emma steps in Maggie's place for the rehearsal. Okay. During the rehearsal... Paul dips Maggie because she swoops in just as it's going on. So she does make kind of the end of it. And Paul dips her and she spots the Irish genie, St. Bridget, we'd learn, in the stained glass because they're getting married in this mansion. But the mansion has this very swanky stained glass, and she spots the Irish genie, St. Bridget, who winks at her. So now the glass is winking at her. And Maggie, as... you know, one would do if stained glass winked at you, she falls out immediately, and it causes quite the kerfuffle at the wedding rehearsal. Later, at the dinner that follows, a cute game goes haywire when it becomes obvious these two are not made for each other. It's one of those cute games where it's like, let's see how much you know about your fiance, and it turns out nothing.
Nothing. So, nothing at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's pretty painfully awkward. James calls her on the whole thing a little bit later on. She's conflicted and unkind about the whole thing to him. It's kind of the oopsie doodle here, although it really wasn't as profound as you would want it to be. At the airport in Iowa, meantime, there are more hijinks when the Irish genie tries to mess things up for mom, trying to get over there. And it starts looking painfully clear that Maggie's mother is not going to make it to the wedding. James, now fully a smitten kitten here, is thumbing through pictures that he took of her on the Irish cliffs. Maggie is, meantime, in her room. She's trying to write a novel, which James recommended she do, find her own voice, that kind of thing. And she spots Paul and Emma through the window of her room at the mansion, stealing a tender moment, which, you know, not something you want to see from your window the night before you're supposed to marry some guy, but, you know.
No, it's not great. Yeah.
Not great. Mm-mm. She clearly realizes she has messed with what's supposed to happen. So Maggie ugly cries, and she does ugly cry here, in a garden after a run-in with James the morning of the wedding, during which he asks if this is really what she wants. She insists that it is, but we all know that's not true. The wedding looks like it is the Irish society event of the spring. I mean, it is fancy. Netflix went big on the budge for this particular scene here. Maggie and Emma have a heart-to-heart about fate in the dressing room prior to the wedding. Then, here comes the bride, except she's no longer wearing the dress that she's supposed to wear. She instead is calling off the wedding, speaks to the power of love. Paul's mother is mad, so is Paul, and they wind up blaming James. And then we get comedic fisticuffs, which... Wasn't on my season 3 bingo card, but here we go.
What was the better cat fight? This or
Ladies of the 80s?
Ladies of the 80s. I was like, Real Housewives. No, it wasn't Real Housewives. Yeah. I think the Ladies of the 80s maybe made me laugh more, but it was up there. It was zany.
It was
up there.
It was pretty zany.
I'll give him that. It went on a little too long.
It did go a little too long.
Yeah. A little cringe.
James scootles out of there, and Maggie follows after him, plants a big smooch on him, and he promptly leaves. And Maggie ugly cries again, because obviously she wants to be with him. He wants to be with her, but he's not having it. And she swiftly takes off to go back to the stone bench we saw at the beginning of this and pleads with the universe or the Irish genie or whatever.
I should have held this. I forgot I had my leprechaun.
Oh, yes.
I should have brought in my leprechaun prop every time the Irish genie does something.
Yes. She pleads with that thing to unwish her wish right there. It works. And the way they convey this is that we get a reverse time travel. It's like they took the movie, played it in reverse. Mm-hmm. Everything happens backwards. It's very time travel-y and very jumpy.
But Netflix loves to do this. Remember, what was the movie we watched, the Christmas one? Crown for Christmas?
Oh, yeah.
And they did the same thing. It wasn't backwards, though. They did flashback montage of the same movie we just watched, and
like
I hated
star
it.
Lens. Yeah.
Yeah, so Netflix likes just kind of recapping all the cinematography you've seen so far right in the last few
They're like, this was a great shot. We want you to see it again, but backwards.
Yes. Look what we can do.
Oh, fancy with their editing. Anyway, the wedding winds up going off without a hitch because now, of course, it's Paul and Emma the way it should have been. Maggie steps out from behind Paul's shadow at the rehearsal and says she's off to go chase down James and do her own thing and find her own voice. And she is a woman on a mission. Sure enough, she finds James on a park bench and they chitter chatter and talk about the promise of a life filled with love as we ultimately fade to black.
Okay, it's time for me and my leprechaun and Josh to give you our gold or coal segment. We are going to each bring 3 gifts. Well, Josh and I are, at least. If there's more gold, it's a pot of gold. How fitting. If there's more coal, it's a stale bowl of off-brand Lucky Charms. Yuck. And if it's a tie, it's just a meh. Josh, I'm coming to you first.
All right. I will say the gold that I have for this is the scenery. I thought this was really quite pretty to watch. It was kind of a tourism commercial for Ireland. We got the best of the best from small towns and villages to pubs to mansions to cliffs to sunsets, the whole nine. I thought it was really visually pretty to watch. So gold for me out of the gate.
Out of the gate, I will give some coal. There is like zero character development of any of these people. They are all so surface level, so basic. It's troubling to me. Not that we really dive in deep on a lot of these movies. That's not why we watch them. But there was just like, they were all one note to me.
One note is a perfect way to describe it. Yeah, everybody was just kind of very cookie cutter, very kind of
like a caricature.
Very much a caricature. Very well said. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cole, for me, the subplot with the mom was just really off. It was weird. It was in some ways kind of unnecessary. It's like we didn't need that character at all. Like,
yeah,
really didn't do anything for the plot. If she needed to sort of tell someone what she was feeling, she had her friends who were there with her. She could have done that kind of stuff with them. It was just very weird. And then some of the time things that they were doing with Iowa versus Ireland, it just, no, did not work for me. So cool.
Agreed. I will give some gold for Lindsay Lohan just because I like seeing her back on my screen. Was this her best performance? No, not at all. Not at all. I much preferred her in, what was the other one? Falling for Christmas. Was that the Christmas one we covered on Netflix? Mm-hmm. I really liked her in that. I honestly feel like, and maybe this was the way it was written and the character development thing again, but just there wasn't that much for her to do. But I'm always going to cheer for Lindsay Lohan, so I'm going to give her some gold.
Which was odd because she was an executive producer on this project, right? So she could have called the shots a little bit more for herself. So
yeah, she looked great.
She looked great. Yeah. And she is really good, I will say, at doing physical comedy in a way that feels believable. It was
maybe, it makes me laugh. Yeah.
It makes me laugh too. Might have happened once or twice too much in this particular movie. It was a little reliant on that. But I
well, because her character wasn't that funny. Like, I think it worked better in Falling for Christmas because that character was so over the top, so out there, and it worked better in that case.
Yeah, agreed. So my last gift is going to be, what is it going to be? I am going to give gold because I thought that the time travel thing could have been cheesy in a way that was off-putting, but I thought it was actually kind of mildly entertaining for me. We have watched some movies where the time travel thing does not work. I'm thinking of that one that we saw on Up TV. The one that was sort of the Dickens.
When they go back to high school?
When they go back to high school and that. Yeah, some of the references and the way that they do it just wasn't up to snuff. This actually worked for me. Was it, I don't know. It's gold, but it's kind of like tarnished gold. Like, not all the
way. But was it time travel or alternate universe?
True. Well said. Okay, yes.
It's more like It's a Wonderful Life kind of, if you've never been born type deal. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So that sort of alternate fate kind of thing. It could have been done cheesily. Is that a word, cheesily? We're going to make it a word.
Sure.
It could have been done cheesily.
This was like a mild cheddar instead of a full sharp cheddar.
Thank you. That's what I'm trying to convey. So gold for me.
Okay. Well, there you go. That's your opinion. I am going to give my last gift is a piece of coal. She didn't need to be with any of these guys. Like, either one. I didn't care. Like, she had zero chemistry with Paul. Like, I'm understanding she had a crush, but he was not giving her any kind of reciprocation or flirting or anything in the real universe or in the alternate universe. And then the photographer guy, what's his name? James. I mean, yes, they had chemistry because they were in pretty scenery together, but like, really, there wasn't that much to hang your hat on, in my opinion.
That's a good point. Maybe I just got swept up in the romance of everything that they were in and doing and that sort of thing. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but that
I don't think
sense.
They'll make it in the real world. There, I said it. I don't think we'll see a part two.
Destined Irish wish too.
Two Irish hearts back to Ireland.
Probably
Irish,
not.
Still wishing. Yeah.
Irish still wishing.
I wish I didn't watch this movie.
There it is. So if you're keeping tabs with us, the final score on this is going to be 3-3. We are just going to call it meh. You know, it's a nice, for me, Irish postcard. It's very saccharine, super predictable, very fluffy.
It's rushed, right?
Yeah, very rushed. It felt very underdeveloped in terms of these characters. It was just kind of there for me.
I feel like there were scenes left on the cutting room floor.
Oh, for sure.
That would have helped tie something together. I'll be honest. I fell asleep watching the movie. Full on fell asleep. Woke up and I was like, oh, I must have been asleep a really long time because we are like, I woke up when the wedding fight was happening. So the wedding was getting called off and I rewound it. Not that far. I had not fallen asleep that long. I had dozed. But a lot happened in a short amount of time because they were just zipping along. And it's Netflix. What do you care? Like, you're not even trying to adhere to cable TV time blocks and commercials. You could have made it however long you want. Not that I needed a 3-hour movie, but it just felt really rushed. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've developed the cry count for me. We need the nap count for you. And so the nap count for you in this one was one.
One nap. Yes. Here's the problem. I watched it on the couch and I was laying down watching it. And that's asking for trouble. I did nap, but I quickly, it was a naplet. It was just a naplet.
A naplet.
The whole rest, I just rested my eyes like a pawpaw.
Like a peepaw.
I wasn't asleep. I was just eating my Werther's Originals and relaxing on a Sunday.
Oh, I love it. There you go.
And that, friends, is another episode of Do You Watch What I Watch?
Thanks for listening to you or watching, and a special thanks to Nick Schwartz, as always, for writing our awesome theme song.
If you like our podcast, tell your friends, tell your pastor, tell your communities, tell whoever. We're here. We're doing it. We're making pods for you.
Yes, we have lots of information and lots of details and really want to connect with all of you on our social media channels. Listen, it has been a busy season for both Jennifer and I. We're just hanging on for a thread. The thing you need to know is that Jennifer and I just added new babies to our families, respectively. So we're here having fun and just laughing along with you and enjoying life as we go and barely awake. So here we go. And you can find everything you want about our podcast at doyouwatchwhatiwatch.com.
Josh is such a pro because he just like digs me out of the holes that I blabber myself into.
This is why we're the dream team, girl.
All right. So next time we are watching and reviewing Shifting Gears. It's brand new on Hallmark Channel. Stars Tyler Hines. Giddy up, Heinies. So set your DVRs. Here's the plot summary. After a female mechanic, Jess, reluctantly agrees to participate in a car restoration show, she is shocked to learn that her ex-boyfriend, Luke, is her main competitor. Will sparks reignite? As always, we will have much to discuss, and Josh is sighing a deep sigh thinking about it. But until then,
may your days be merry and bright. And to be honest, it's that reference to sparks. I mean, I love a pun, but that's just too much. So.
Don't act like we're better than that. We're not better than that.
True, we're not. Anyway, see you next time.